Hello and welcome to another Directions Media podcast. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief. Today's podcast is an interview with a good friend and former colleague, Peter Tahar, the Director of Products for the Ordnance Survey in Great Britain. We're going to be talking about three topics today: the Open Data Initiative, the Open Government Licensing that was just initiated, and Geovation, a map challenge conducted to spur innovation using geospatial technology and to help solve problems in the UK. Please stay tuned. I hope you enjoy the interview.
Okay, let's talk about open data and transparency.
Okay.
That's a real initiative the Ordnance Survey is doing, and so I'm kind of curious about the whole issue of open data and what it means for your business model, and maybe some of the new licensing, the open government license that just came out recently.
All right. It's a bit of a story that I think is interesting to see how it all went. In May 2009, we launched a new business model. In that new business model, we said we need to be working better with our customers. We need to do better, which means we have to. And there were 5 points that we then looked at. So we have to promote innovation better. Right. We really have to be better at promoting innovation, at supporting innovation in the various, not just promotion, but enabling innovation
within OS.
Within the geospatial world. We have to enable governments, our government customers, to do their job better. Mm. One of the things, for instance, was that local government was working under contractual terms between Ordnance Survey and local governments that were drafted in 2003. Mm. You know what happened since 2003, right?
Yeah.
We hadn't even heard about Google Maps at the time.
Right.
So the whole internet era had not been incorporated into that. Because of all kinds of contractual issues, government, central and local government couldn't work together very well. It was just a mess. So we said that needs to be sorted. We also said, in general, we need to make the access
much easier.
The legal access primarily. So that's the licensing model. We need to make our licensing easier. And then we said, there was a fourth point where we said we need to increase our own business transparency. There were a couple of activities that we were doing that were competing directly with, or that were potentially competing directly with, the private sector.
Yeah, right.
Specifically on accessing the consumers. And in that area, so we need to increase transparency. So that was point four. And point five is, we know that all these things are going to cost, are going to potentially decrease revenue. So in order to be able to pay for those four things, we need to reduce our cost base. So we said, okay, we will start on a very aggressive cost reduction program, a 35% of our base cost reduction over 5 years.
Wow, that's so aggressive.
That's very aggressive. So those 5 points were launched in May 2009. The innovation thing stream was about opening up our product through the Open Space web platform, so the Open Space web API, mm-hmm. to any developer that wanted, or any web user that wanted, but for relatively small sites, because we didn't want to compete with Bing and Google,
right.
we simply didn't want to. We didn't see that as part of our role. Our role was to enable access to the data so that people could work with it, could play with it, could use it, but not necessarily to completely build a business on our free service. If they wanted to have a business, build a real business on it, we would still expect a contribution to the maintenance of that data, basically. Yeah.
And there's certainly a great deal of confidence in the OS data set.
Absolutely.
By people in Britain that they'd want to gravitate towards that data set.
Absolutely. So that was fairly well received, although with a lot of skepticism about, those are nice plans, but does Ordnance Survey really mean it? Do you really, and are you really going to deliver? And especially, so the more open licensing of our data tried to solve some of the horrible problems that we had, that the markets and we ourselves have created through the years, around derived data, around data sharing, around exclusivity in markets, and all those kind of things, trying to solve those kind of things. there was a lot of skepticism in the market that we could do anything like that. And then innovation was a lot of, it's nice, but is it enough? Are your programs enough? Is Open Space and the Geovation network that we launched at that same time, are those initiatives enough? So that was the first phase one. And then in the summer of 2009, the Prime Minister appointed Tim Berners-Lee as an advisor on opening up, on creating a more transparent government. I said, we need to open up data, just make it available. Don't make it just available as PDFs or something like that. Make it available as data. Then recognized that 60 to 80% of government data is spatially is easier right. to understand if you spatially enable it,
right?
And has a certain spatial components, whether it being an address, a postcode, a town name, or really a deep geospatial record or something
right.
of some kind. And so there was then a need to create at least a basic framework of free geospatial data.
So yes, so talk a little bit about that transition from the what was perceived as a locked up data set in the US to a freemium model. And
yeah,
that's really important.
Yeah. So okay, we went through that whole thing and worked with that project team that was appointed by the Prime Minister to open up that data. We worked with that project team to make them really understand, again, what do you want to achieve?
Yeah.
And for us then to understand what is the data that we would need to open up, because government didn't want to afford or couldn't afford, it probably more couldn't now, didn't want to at that time.
Yeah.
I think we now start to realize the impact of the recession. Didn't want to afford paying for everything that Ordnance Survey does out of the taxpayers' money.
Mm-hmm.
So government wanted to retain a customer relationship with us for products that government needs to run government.
Under government.
And then a second contract for this open data initiative. So we worked on trying to figure out what the data sets needed to be. And what we've done is we've created a set of data that is, for many users, is good enough to do their work, or to build their applications. So there is data for topographic mapping down to from a 1 million scale up to a 1 in 10,000 scale, fairly accurate data. There is data for, let's say, consumer topographic mapping, slightly smaller scales. There is addressing data with not the detailed address, but the more generalized address, the postcode location. But the postcode is only in urban areas is only 20 buildings or 20 houses,
right.
20 addresses. So it is still fairly accurate.
Right.
And boundary information. So where is this? What's the size of this this municipality, etc. So for contextual mapping, those two data sets are extremely important.
Yeah. So fairly rich data set.
Fairly rich data set.
Yeah.
And then the other side of Ordnance Survey, then there is a growth path. There's
right.
a growth path from free to premium. And that is now opened up in by our renewed licensing model that came into play in mid-November. So it took us quite a while to develop that, because
yeah.
it's a very complex matter.
And also a cultural change.
And also yeah. a cultural change.
Yeah.
So the new, for the premium products, we actually now have three blocks of licensing. One is our relationship with government as a customer.
Mm-hmm.
We've consolidated that. We've consolidated the central government, the local governments, and the emergency services, and all kinds of special contracts we had with special units in London. We consolidated all that into one big license, which is the public sector mapping agreement. And that license gives government the right, which is one big contract, and gives every entity of government down to local parish levels access to all Ordnance Survey data to do their core business. Right. We introduced something what we call core business rights, so you can do your job. That's right. basically what the license is. This license gives you the right to do what you need to do as a part of your daily job, daily
activity,
as government. There's one exclusion, and that is where government wants to behave as a commercial vendor or as a commercial player, then government will have to play under the same terms that other commercial players have to play.
Okay.
Because of competition fairness. Yeah. So we introduced that. Then there's a second group of licenses, and that's licensing businesses to do their own internal job.
Without releasing a product to the public.
Yes, they can publish the results of their work, and they can promote themselves on the web and those kind of things. But that this is typically for the traditional GI use almost, of which there still is a whole lot. Yeah, so it's British Telecom for their utility networks. Yeah. It is we're seeing Aviva insurance company. It is also again there. It is to do their job. The big change there has been that we've been able to lower some of the headline prices of our most important products. I think the biggest change is that we've now allowed a reseller that to go also be licensed through resellers. So all resellers can now also license or sell licenses to business for their own internal administration. So the reselling of raw data, basically, of raw unprocessed products, rather than before, the model was that we said, we only allow value-added reselling. So that's the second block. Yes, we also still sell direct into that market. Mm-hmm. And then the third group is is supporting the value-added products. So that's from, printed products,
typical OS product line.
Yeah, so it's supporting others to print products. It's the supporting partners to put data in a GPS device. Supporting partners to put data on the web or support. So it is supporting sell through of really value added reselling by partners. And there. The market is that is a pure indirect
channel.
Mm-hmm. And their licenses or pricing is very dependent on the rights that are given to the partner. Mm-hmm. The product that may cost in the direct internal business channel, a product like a road network may cost. I have to invent a number here because I don't know, but in the order of magnitude of £100,000 for an enterprise-wide license will cost if you sell it through to a GPS device may cost maybe as little as maybe 7 pence. It's technically the same product, but the use is so much different, and obviously expected that the GPS provider sells a couple of million of their devices. So altogether, the contribution is significant back. So the reseller channel has a lot more opportunities now, and I think that will eventually pay back as well to us.
Yeah.
Yes, we have to give a margin now. I mean, you know how partner channels work. You've done it yourself.
Yeah.
Yes, we have to give a margin to our partners, and we can't sell undercut them and all those kind of things. We won't. We will play by the rules because we think that's better. Eventually, it's better for us.
Sure.
But we see that that some of our partners have a reach into markets that we can never reach.
Yeah.
And that's the opportunity.
Yeah.
So specifically markets like the insurance market, but also more traditional markets like the architects, the whole planning market. The transaction volumes are enormous. The value per transaction is relatively low. That is a typical partner space. We shouldn't play in that. We can't play in that very well. Mm-hmm. We never could. And again, there we're starting to see that data became much more accessible for smaller contracts now, right, as well.
And where it wouldn't have been before.
Where it wouldn't have been before, or under different conditions. We did have those mechanisms. I mean, we've always had hundreds of partners that were reselling on our behalf, but never under they have a lot more freedom to go out and really make money now than they have ever had before.
Yeah. I know you got to go, but I wanted to ask you about the Geovation Challenge.
Yeah.
Whether that's been a successful initiative to spur innovation.
I think it has been. It's an interesting concept. It doesn't cost that much to us. You know, we have one person on it.
Yeah.
And it is a concept that where we said, let's see if we can promote innovation in another way. So we set challenges. We say, and the first year we set an open challenge. We said, come up with problems, and then we try to match your problem with people that have solutions.
Mm.
You may have a question that you want to answer it, but you don't have the technical skills, or you may have technical skills but you don't have the funding, or you may have the funding but you don't have the. It is really a network, trying to create a network of people with problem, people with solutions, people with money, people with contacts,
and with
business skills particularly to do it, and particularly the business skills we saw. That where we saw a lot of needs and a lot of additional need to help them solve it. So the first year, we have to wait what the second year is going to bring. But the first year, we had three winners of the challenge out of the 10 that were presenting themselves. Two of those have grown into small but successful businesses, small but profitable businesses.
Right.
So after a year, they are still there, and the little bit of seed funding, but also the little bit of advice and coaching and free advertising, etc., that we gave them has helped them to kickstart their business. A third one didn't make it. Well, you know, that's what happens. And a fourth one that didn't make the prize money was picked up by one of the Geovation judges. As a mentor, and he's now, I think he's now the chair of their board, and is now
become
yeah. So yeah, he put a bit of personal investment into it, and that worked out that way. It was geo.me. It's a small. It's still a small technology company. It was picked up by Stephen Feldman.
Oh yeah, sure.
So that worked quite well. Geovation creates momentum. It creates awareness. It creates it creates publicity for geo.
Right.
And we said we don't want to restrict it to ordnance survey data or something like that. And what that's also what we see. I mean, we see half the ideas that are realized using Google or other data,
yeah,
and the other half is using ordnance survey data. And actually, it shouldn't matter, because you create innovation, and innovation will grow the geospatial market space, and that will eventually be good for. Eventually, it will be good for us as well. I mean, there's no doubt about it, and that's obviously why we do it. And on the back of that, we're investing a hell of a lot in product development, with really finishing the transition now between cartographic products and database products over the next couple of years.
Hmm.
But we are now transitioning that much more to vector products that are much more customizable by the customers. And the first one that we released in that family was... Well, the first one was a 10,000 scale product we launched a year and a half ago, and now we are we launched for open data. We launched a what we call vector map district, which is it sits at that 25 to 50,000 scale, if you want to call it that. We try to get away from scales.
Yeah.
We really try to, and that's a product that's completely automatically generalized, and that's really that's really a very exciting thing as well to where we're investing a lot of money in over the next couple of years.
Yeah.
To do, you know, a lot of automatic generalization, knowing that you can't do everything automatically, that you have to continue to have your people as well, and to really build a better stack of data for the business users.
Yeah.
And that's quite cool.
Thanks.
All right.
Appreciate it so much.
No props.
Thanks for joining us today on another Directions Media podcast. If you'd like to comment about today's interview, please write to us at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks again, and be sure to tell a friend.